You're tuning in to KPCRadio.com. Today is March 21st, 2016, and you are listening to Education.
Where we put the edge in education.
My name is Steven Nicholson.
My name is Emmanuel Arias.
And let's get right into this.
Today on the show, we have Travis Olaf, who's a professor at Pierce College, who went to the University of Washington and got his undergraduate and earned a bachelor's degree in science and earth, space science, and got a PhD at the University of Santa Cruz in earth and planetary science, who has been teaching at Pierce for 2013.
As we get into the first line of questions, we mainly focus on communications between teachers and students, and also education.
How are you doing today, Professor Olaf?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Okay, that's good to hear. Our first question is, did your major turn out to be what you wanted to be?
Originally, when I first went to college, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do with my major. I was thinking computer science, possibly another type of science, but I ended up doing earth and space science, which is mainly geology focused. So I guess I'd say that it changed from what I originally planned on.
Oh, geology. So you know some bit about earth locations.
Yes, I've been studying geology for like 12 years in college and then a few years since then. My specialty, though, is in geology of the planet Mars.
Oh, wow. Can you tell us a little bit about information about Mars?
So Mars is a planet about the third the size of Earth. It was created about the same time as Earth. It did not have a lot of the same benefits that Earth did, though. Its atmosphere is very thin. It's a lot smaller. And this caused the Mars to be pretty unable to protect itself or to modify its own terrain very much. So it's very cratered, a lot like our moon is. It has kind of a similar appearance. Although Mars is a little bit bigger than the moon and did have some geology active at its surface. So there's some canyons, there's some volcanoes. And actually Mars has polar caps a lot like Earth does. And there's ice in these polar caps. So it's a very interesting place to look at in that it does have a lot of similarities and the potential for habitable environments.
Recently they were talking in the news about finding water on Mars, I believe it was. Something like that. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so water has been found on Mars again and again and again in different ways. First in the 1970s, and then we're pretty much now trying to find out how long it was there water on Mars and where was that water on Mars, what form did it take. So pretty much every trip to Mars has produced a similar result in that water has been found on Mars. The most recent one, probably in the news that you're referring to, is that there is a rover on the surface of Mars called Curiosity that went to a location called Gale Crater. And in this crater is what's called sedimentary rocks, which form when particles get involved with water and form these layers that are very kind of discrete. And you can see how these layers change, and that tells you a lot about how the surface and atmosphere of Mars was impacted by its environment.
Well, I've always been one to be really fascinated by space and everything, so that's really awesome that you are kind of learning about that and studying that. Was teaching ever your first idea as a job?
I knew when I was about 10 years old or so that I wanted to stay in school forever. I just didn't really understand what that entailed or how to accomplish that. I would say that my first idea was various types of scientists, not really knowing that most professional scientists either stay in a lab or stay in a university. And so I guess I did stay kind of with that path. I knew that I wanted to be a scientist of some sort and that I just didn't know that they stayed in school for forever. And I did get to accomplish that, or at least I'm getting close to that. So I look forward to teaching for many, many more years to come.
Okay. Has education ever changed that much from your time to right now?
For that, I'm not fully certain. Definitely, there was a lower stress on technology when I was in kind of K through 12. Starting when I was in high school, there was a lot more emphasis on computers and their integration with classrooms. I'm not so certain that was the case before. It's definitely the case now. Technology is involved, even in elementary schools. So I feel like kind of the integration of technology is definitely the biggest thing for me, but I'm still relatively just fresh out of school. And I finished my PhD in 2012, so I've been in school all throughout the 2000s and the 90s. Not too much stuff is different.
Is there a big problem with education and technology and like some issues?
I haven't really thought about that too much. I think technology is great in some ways in that you have access to a much wider array of information and it's just at your fingertips and you can get a hold of it really, really quickly. But in some ways, since you have that ability, you don't have to maintain that information yourself. So you don't just know things as much anymore. You know how to find those things. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I think, can be debated. But that's definitely one sort of major difference that having the technology has done to versus not having it.
Very true. Is there any words of wisdom you want to give students regarding that or anything?
I was thinking earlier about this, and I would say that you're going to get what you put in as well. It would probably be the best thing I could say. If you work hard, then you'll get a lot out of it. If you just kind of slide by, you're not going to get as much. So if you really want to take advantage of this opportunity, you need to put in as much as you can into it. Slacking off is not going to get you where you want to go.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
Yes, going back to your career here at Pierce since 2013, correct?
That's right.
Have you been teaching at any other location?
Not as a full-time teacher. This has been my first full-time teaching experience. Before this, though, I was a teaching assistant as an undergraduate, so I stayed in a lab and helped students do their lab. And then after that, I was also called a teaching assistant, but a graduate teaching assistant. And in this case, I would have kind of my own group of 30 students from a much larger class of 300 or 400 students. And kind of I would take those 30 students aside and have my own class with them.
Was that at a university or a school?
That was at the UC Santa Cruz. While I was going to grad school, I was also teaching, but not in a full-time capacity.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, for your entirety of teaching, how long has that been?
I think the first class that I was involved with teaching would have been in 2005.
That's quite a while.
So 2005 was when I was an undergraduate and helping out in the class. And then in 2006, I started having my own sections of classes and then being the full-time teacher of record, not until 2013.
Was it nervous the first time teaching?
Not really. I found it to be quite natural. And again, I wanted to be in school since I was 10 years old for forever. So I find the classroom a very comfortable environment, luckily.
Okay. What's your favorite aspect of teaching?
Just being in the classroom, being up at the front of the room, talking about the science that I love and sharing that with other people. I find it just thrilling and so enjoyable. When people have that kind of light bulb go on in their brains when they finally understand something, watching that happen and helping that happen is incredibly gratifying for me. And I really like to be there when it happens.
Okay. So you probably hear that, when you finally get it.
Absolutely. Yep. Get a lot of those. And just kind of the bright smiles that people get when they can finally kind of harness their intellect to conquer a subject. It's empowering, I think.
Hmm. Who is your inspiration for teaching?
I had two teachers that really helped me out, and then one public figure, probably. My second grade teacher really taught me that love of learning, and I think it was in that class that I decided I wanted to stay in school forever. That was one Mr. Walsh at Anatole Elementary, actually not too far from here. Excuse me. Then my physics teacher in high school, Mr. Ramstead in Simi Valley, he really influenced me and just showed me how science can be creative and how it can be fun and how you can play with it. So those two teachers really influenced me quite a bit. And then Neil deGrasse Tyson is kind of my new one. I love hearing him speak and just how he interacts with public is really powerful. And his drive to increase the scientific understanding of the American populace and everything he's doing for that is really inspiring to me.
How's your college experience going so far?
Well, I've been in college 12 years myself as a student and 3 years so far as a professor, and I've loved every minute of it. I wouldn't change a thing. Each step has been new and different, but still very interesting and very active. I've really loved all of the people that I've met and come across in the different classes and the different cities. Everything has been really great. And coming here to Pierce has been especially great because I've pretty much come back home. I went away to go to school myself, and now I'm back. I have my family around and my old friends, and it's been really great to share my life with them again.
How do you absorb all that knowledge then from your experience?
It's a lot of work. Luckily, I have been gifted. I've been able to just understand things pretty quickly, which not everyone has that ability. Sometimes it takes a lot of work, but even still, it's effort. It's just trying really hard all the time. If that's the key, I think, is that you need to put in the time to maintain that information, and it just doesn't come naturally. You have to work at it.
Okay. Do you recommend going out of state or out of your comfort zone to go study?
I think it depends on the person. In some cases, absolutely, and in others, not at all. Part of it depends on your financial ability and your ability to pay for the school and being out of state. But sometimes I think getting away from old environments puts you in a new environment that you can potentially really thrive in as well. It might also depend on what you want to study. Some people might not have the schools nearby that will give you the programs that you need to go and study. So I think for me, moving out of state was definitely the way to go, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend that for everyone.
Right. I wouldn't either, because my parents wanted me to move out of state to certain colleges and stuff, and I felt that wasn't really the right move for me, because I wanted to stay near home, and that's where I felt that I probably absorbed the most education from that. But on teaching and everything, what is your preferred teaching style? How do you teach?
That also really depends on the class itself and the type of material that you're trying to convey. There are, to me, two main types of classes. A lecture-based class, and then kind of a work-based, hands-on class. Right now, the one that I'm teaching physical sciences for is a very much hands-on approach class. We do a lot of just interacting with experiments, with other students, communicating. There's maybe 10 minutes of lecture to just go over some basic topics and prepare you for the experiment itself, but really just be hands-on and ask questions and get involved is very much kind of the name of the game for my current class. But it really depends on the type of information you're trying to convey. Some things are much better displayed in kind of a lecture-based format with PowerPoints and kind of visuals to combine them together. I think it really does depend on the information presented. Kind of if it's lists of information and facts, definitely the lecture-based approach would be more beneficial. And that's probably the sort of approach I would take in teaching like a planetary science class that I've put together and hopefully we'll teach in the next year or so.
Okay. Besides lecture and hands-on, how do you teach or how do you give the information to students so they can absorb it?
One of the big things I do a lot is that anytime a student asks me a question, I ask them questions back. I think when you have to answer your own question, you can kind of figure out or teach yourself the correct answers or how things work. So again, my class right now, Physical Sciences 4, it's a very hands-on approach. We do a lot of experiments in class, and a student will often ask a question about a certain topic, and then I'll kind of respond by asking them first what did they see in the experiment, and what does that mean? How does that connect to our topics, our different types of energies or forces or interactions or any of these sorts of kind of core class concepts, and really just apply what are you physically seeing, and how does that connect with the things that we're learning about?
Oh, so you just pretty much give them a little path to follow.
Pretty much, yes.
You let them be their own teachers?
Exactly.
That's awesome. Do you learn from teaching your students?
I wouldn't say I learn about my own topic so much, but I learn a lot about different people and different backgrounds and diversity and cultural differences and just how people can interact together, and really kind of a lot more about the social aspect of teaching and kind of the theory behind education. I've been learning a lot about that from my students. Just kind of how do people learn and what ways work better for different people. I think these are kind of the sorts of things that I've been learning from my students. Some people definitely learn just from the hands-on stuff. Others want kind of more of a path to follow, so to speak. So learning how to teach has been what I've been learning from my students, I think.
Okay. In your major, what interests you the most in planetary science? Just the exploration or just finding out more?
Well, my second goal when I was a little kid was that I wanted to learn something that no one had ever known before. So to do that, you need to kind of go to the fringe area. Where are the topics that people know the least about? And for me, there's a lot of studying, lots of people doing geology here on Earth. I was more interested in kind of applying those things in new environments that have never been seen before. And so that's really what interested me in planetary science, is that kind of what was known already was a lot less. There were more opportunities to find out about the unknown. And really that unknown was just really attractive to me. Mars in particular, we've sent a lot of satellites there in the past 10, 20 years, so that we're getting more and more and more information. So there's all this data available for Mars, but not a lot of answers yet. So I found kind of the combination of the that potential that was just waiting there really attractive.
Okay. You probably get this question a lot, but do you believe in extraterrestrial life?
So as far as extraterrestrials go, I'm almost certain that they do exist somewhere in the universe. However, I don't think that they've ever contacted anyone here on Earth. So there's this idea called the Drake Equation, which a famous scientist came up with in the early 1900s, that kind of tries to estimate how much life there would be in the universe and that was capable of intelligent thought. And if you just throw in ballpark numbers into the equation, you come up with hundreds, if not thousands or millions even, of planets in the universe that have life. Unfortunately, all of these planets are extremely far apart from each other. The distances between them, for example, for our star and the nearest stars around us, is about 10 years for light to travel itself. Most stars in the universe are not within that distance. They are much, much, much further apart. For example, the Milky Way galaxy that our star resides in is about 200 million light years across, which means it takes 200 million years for light or a signal from one planet on one side of the galaxy to get all the way to the other side. So because of this, right, the lifetimes of all sorts of living beings seems unlikely to last for millions of years. And for this reason, we just don't think that it's possible for there to be interstellar communication between the different planets. But it's very likely that there is. And one thing that's new and has been happening a lot recently is that there's a new satellite called Kepler, which looks for new planets. It's found about 3,000 planets outside of our solar system that were not known about before. And it turns out that when we look at the stars that are out there, almost all of them have planets. And so this increases the likelihood of there being more life out there than we previously had thought, based on that Drake equation we were talking about.
And these plants would need to be in something called the Goldilocks zone, which means they're habitable and everything.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a certain distance that you have to be within the from the star to be warm enough or cold enough, right? You don't want to be too hot. You'll burn up. You don't want to be too cold. You'll freeze. And so for any water-based life form at the least, you would want to be in a certain range. Now, there might be other potential types of life forms, but we just simply don't know.
What are your thoughts on Andromeda coming kind of in a collision course with the Milky Way?
So I haven't really heard too much about this, but Andromeda is another galaxy, and the time scales for it colliding with Earth would be in the hundreds of millions, if not billions, of years. So as far as we're concerned, I think we're going to be pretty safe. I would worry more about kind of our own star exploding, which still won't happen for another 6 billion years or so.
Mm-hmm. Well, back on the topic with students and everything, what are some good aspects in a student that you see for them to be successful?
Definitely the number one is just responsibility, right? You got to turn in all of your assigned work. You've got to be there. You've got to show up. Again, like what you put in is what you're going to get out. So by being responsible, you'll get the best ability for that. Then just working hard, right? You gotta learn a lot. Each class has its own set of information that you really have to master. So there's a lot to go for.
Okay. What are some big major importance in your job?
The thing that's most important to me is that I want my students to learn. I think that's what I care most about. I want them to do well. And I'm not always successful with that, unfortunately. It's right, I have to get my students to show up every day. I have to make them engaged. And so I really try to make classes as much fun as I possibly can. Because by being fun, people want to take part. They want to be there. They want to learn.
What are the most difficult aspects of teaching today?
There's a lot of kind of bureaucracy behind what's going on in teaching. There's all the meetings. There's all the funding issues. There's all sorts of politics that goes on, and that's really difficult to deal with sometimes. I know a lot of other teachers have to face being an adjunct for a long time, which means that they don't have that full-time opportunity. They don't have the health care. So there's a lot of uncertainty in our teaching force as well. And that's a really big problem that's going to be faced in the not too distant future.
Okay. What is your favorite thing about students, honestly? Just finding out the knowledge, or do you want them to use it later in the future?
I feel like my class is the last opportunity to give science to students for a lot of my students. And I think I want students to retain this information because, one, it'll make them critical thinkers. They have to think about what is it that they're seeing, what are their observations, and how do you deduce information from that? What can you say about the future based on that? And I think this ability is extremely important because we're all going to be voters, and that we need to be able to critically think about what people are saying, what they're doing, so we can make the best decisions for our own country. And a scientifically educated populace is absolutely necessary for a democracy.
All right. Well, thank you for being on the show. You've been listening to KPC Radio's Education. My name is Steven Nicholson.
My name is Manny Arias.
And I'm Travis Orloff.
And have a good day.